Blog Talk Radio.
Studios in Tampa, Florida. I am your host, Carson Mathis, where the theme of the show is to give raw, uncut, and unedited objective analysis on major college and pro football. Let me introduce the panel. Callie Mike, what's up?
Hey, how's it going, everybody? Looking forward to a good show today.
All right, Shottown Mike, what's up?
How's it going, everybody? I know everybody enjoyed that Super Bowl. You're here to talk about it, and I guess have a post, you know, talk about the Super Bowl and what's going ahead in NFL and college football.
All right. Big Tex is having a little technical difficulties with his mic, so he's going to be with us shortly. First and foremost, I want to talk about, before we get into the NFL, I want to talk about today, National Signing Day for college football. What I want to know, according to, I think, ESPN and Bleacher Report. Alabama and Florida kind of are tied for the best recruiting class. ESPN, I think, has Florida number one. Bleacher Report has Alabama number one. My question is to start off with, who do you think are the biggest winners of the signing day, and who do you think are probably the biggest losers of the signing day? I'm going to start with you, Callie Mike.
Well, I mean, it's signing day, so, you know, I mean, everybody that pretty much, you know, is going to get, you know, kind of what they're looking for. So, I mean, everybody's going to be, a winner, especially, you know, when you look at the major schools, you know, because you're going to see, you know, pretty much, you know, usual suspects are going to be at the top. I'll say some of the schools that surprised me were Ole Miss coming in. You know, they had a really strong class this year. They got Robert Nkandiche, Larry Tunsil, and Laquan Treadwell, you know, who are already number one at the positions, defensive line, O-line, and wide receiver, respectively. They had a pretty quality class. It's a couple of like I said, they surprised me. They had a good class. I look at Baylor. You know, they had a really decent class. UCLA had an excellent class this year. I think really Ole Miss would have to come out, you know, the winner in this, just because, you know, traditionally recently they haven't really been that much, you know, of a power recruiting wise, you know, especially since, you know, Eli Manning left there. But, you know, like I said, you know, for them to get, you know, a top 10 class, you know, is a big boost for them. Also, Vanderbilt had good classes this year. Florida State closed really strong. In terms of disappointing, I look at Oregon, you know, coming off of, you know, four straight BCS bowls. And, you know, not finishing their top 10. Of course, they had a lot to do with Chip Kelly leaving. So you can kind of expect there to be some type of drop-off. Washington also had a very strong class this year, too. But, you know, like I said, other than that, you know, a lot of, you know, Michigan, you know, they had a really good class. I think they were rated number one or two, a couple of polls. Ohio State, you know, they finished really strong. I mean, like I said, you got the usual, you got the usual suspects back together again. Surprising, I don't see, I haven't seen Miami really that high on a lot of lists. I know they got, you know, a lot of quality recruits with Ben Olsen's little brother. He's one of the top quarterbacks in the country, but I don't really see them on any of the top lists. But other than that, like I said, you know, this was a very interesting signing day, just because, you know, all the publicity it got. It seems like, you know, once social media starts paying attention to something, it kind of blows up, you know. So we're seeing a lot of Twitter updates and, you know, a lot of Facebook updates, and, you know, and everybody, you know, even though, like I say, in terms of, you know, a flip-flopping, it was actually kind of slow compared to the past year, you know, because most of these guys were foregone conclusions. But, you know, overall, like I say, you know, that's pretty much what I think, you know, winners and losers-wise. But, you know, a lot of talent came out this year, though.
Okay. We'll start with you, Chi-Town. We're still trying to get Tex on here. He's coming on and off in the studio. But what's your big thing on this, Chi-Town?
Well, early, I don't really get caught up into all that who this and the top recruiting. I just let it play out and watch it every now and see a little something. But, you know, Ole Miss, yeah, they've definitely been the story since they got the top prospect and some other players, you know, they were top up there. They were able to get some top players, so... It's gonna be. They got some, you know, some pub, you know, heading into the season, you know, especially coming to the SEC. You know, like I saw, like we had said before, we got on the show by Alabama that, you know, they have, you know, a good class right now. They said they're number one. You know, after, you know, being the national champion, so that's pretty good of, you know, stocking and reloading. And they were saying about Nick Saban, like he has a system there. You know what he does, and hey, it works, and he wins, and. You know, it's all with the coaching. Kind of two teams I'm kind of like didn't hear too much, which I was going to hear a lot, I thought, which, you know, they both, you know, were strong, was Texas A&M. I didn't really hear much about Texas A&M. Like I was saying that, you know, with Kevin Sutherland, I think a lot of the top Texas prospects would be going to A&M and not going to UT because of him, what he's doing in Texas A&M, you know. I'm just kind of.
They got a lot of switches, Mike. They didn't get some of the big names, but they got, you know, they got a pretty quality class. They got, you know, I know they got Ricky Seals Jones. He switched from UT, they got a Sebastian LaRue. He was a decommit from USC.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they really didn't get none of the big names. But I think they had a quality class. I think they're, you know, top
15,
top 20 class, maybe.
And then,
wow.
Thanks for telling me about that, Kelly, Mike. I'm glad to hear that. Hey, they'd be on the radar again, but I thought after, you know, this team beat Alabama, you know, I thought, man, okay, this team is on the rise even more with Sutherland. But, you know, I thought maybe right there, but I guess they're just going to show it again, you know.
You might have to give them another year or so, you know.
Yeah. You know, I thought Florida, too, you know, hearing what they did, I thought Florida kind of did all right, you know, recruiting. I mean, they did to me well last year. So I think they did all right again this year going into, you know, Muschamp. This is going to be year number three. Also, I'm going to add another team I just thought about. The second team I was going to say is Stanford. I didn't really hear too much about Stanford. You know, Shaw, he's a quality coach, you know, a hot candidate, you know, for the NFL. I thought, you know, you'd be hearing more on Stanford. But maybe Stanford's going to probably definitely, you know, saying that possibly.
I mean,
you know,
they got these academic. I mean, it's kind of academic things there.
You got to actually get accepted. You got to go to Stanford. You know, you can't pull a 2.0 and expect to go to Stanford, no matter how good you are. You know.
Yeah, it's not going to happen. Well,
I just thought about that. Yeah, that makes sense. You think they might have to change it, do some type of restrictions when it comes to the athletes they want, though, since they're going to be pulling them?
Cal Berkeley does it, but I don't think Stanford's going to do that. It just depends upon the culture of the school, what they allow.
Yeah, well, Cal's a public school too. You know, Stanford's a private school. So.
Oh, that's true. I didn't think about that.
I think public schools, I think they have to take a certain amount of kids with a certain GPA, I believe, and I think most of those get used on athletics anyway. So.
Yeah, that's true. My biggest winner is Florida, obviously. Keep going with what you got to say, Shot Town.
Another team, I don't know if you all heard about, but I didn't really hear too much about them too, but even though he's been showing it and this is going to be year four, is Louisville. We all know Charlie Strong got them Florida players coming in, you know, recruiting, so I didn't really hear too much about Louisville either.
Yeah. Allegedly, they're like a disappointment.
I didn't think about that. But yeah, I didn't hear a lot about them either.
Well, my biggest winner is the Florida Gators, only because they were able to stockpile on positions of need, particularly the running back position, the defensive back position. They got the number one defensive back in the country. They got the number one running back in the country. Well, I don't know. I don't know if he was the number one running back. They got 2 5-star running backs there. Fred Taylor's son and so this guy here out of Tampa. I can't remember his name. I think
Vernon Hargreaves, the cornerback.
Yeah, I'm thinking the Florida Gators right now are in terms of talent wise, they're going to obviously be a top five team, continuing to the next 3-4 years with that type of class. Because I think last year they had a pretty good class too, so a top five class too last year. So I mean, Alabama, obviously they're going to win, but the only thing about Alabama is that defensive line, man, they really got to address that. They're stacked in the secondary. They're stacked. I think they're kind of stacked at the quarterback position. They're stacked at the running back position. They're stacked at the receiving position. They're stacked on the offensive line. But the only thing that they're not really stacked on in terms of 4 5-star recruits are going to be, well, I wouldn't say that. Maybe 5-star recruits is the defensive line. So hopefully, you know, because they don't have that type of, what's the guy, Javon Clowney. I was thinking maybe Robert Dimdishi would consider Alabama, but I guess he didn't. He didn't even consider Alabama, so that was shocking to me right there.
Well, his older brother goes to Ole Miss.
Yeah, I know, but like the finalists were Ole Miss, LSU, and I think Florida was the third one.
Yeah, Alabama. They didn't mention Alabama.
Even in the middle. That was shocking to me.
I think he was going to be Ole Miss all along. You know, I was talking with Tex earlier, and you know, I think he's the only one of us that got kids, and you know, even you know, he said he would let his kids make the decision, but you know, like I say, you know, a lot of times family, you know, they have a influence on where you go, and you know, your parents. You know what I mean? You know, look at, we had one, you know, I don't know if you guys heard, I forget what his name is, but we had one recruit's mom stole his letter of intent.
He found plantation in Florida.
So he couldn't sign with Arkansas, I guess. So, you know, it gets kind of wild on these kids, you know.
And I mean, he didn't have to have his mom's approval of doing that because he was, you know, 18, and he could have signed it without, you know, her consent on that, so.
Yeah.
She wanted him to stay in state, but you know, he wanted to leave out of state.
Yeah, see, stuff like that, man. I don't that's not a good sign. But the thing is, hopefully, yeah, the biggest winners are, in my opinion, Florida, Ole Miss is another one. Ohio State's one of them, even though they were already pretty good. Penn State's another one. Those are my winners. Let's get into the losers, though. Who do you think are the losers? Which schools that you thought, man, were like, wow, this team's going to, you know, going to be recruiting, but they didn't get what they expected? Let me start with Shot Town here.
Also, so I was going to probably say, even though it's not no surprise, you know, Ohio State, but I guess we all know because Ohio State being on probation, you know, but Urban Meyer, but still, regardless that, of course, they're going to be still heading in the right direction. But, you know, of course, didn't hear too much about them. And didn't really hear too much about, I'll say, Notre Dame. No, I think they're back. No, Michigan. Notre Dame heard some recruits. Michigan, I didn't think it'd get as much like I thought, you know, it would. You know, I thought it would probably get more. So, it's going to be interesting right there.
Yeah, pretty good class. I'm looking at scout.com, and they got them rated number 2.
Who, Michigan?
Mm-hmm. And they just, like I say, most of these guys, you know, if you look at most of the major schools, they've had their recruits, you know, they've been kind of wrapped up for, you know, for a year now, you know, especially, you know, some of these other guys, you know, a lot of these guys, they do early enrollment, you know, these guys are already on campus anyway, you know, so it's kind of, you know, sometimes a recruit, you know, like Incom Beachy, you know, he might not know where he wants to go, so he's going to wait, you know, until signing day. Or I remember like Terrell Pryor did when he was at Ohio, you know, before he came to Ohio State, you know, everybody was wondering where he was going, and he even went after signing day. But, you know, most of these guys, I think right now, you know, a lot of them, since, you know, it becomes, you know, it's so filling now, I think a lot of these guys want to get done with the recruiting process early, you know, because you got everybody on your Twitter checking everything you're going to do, you know, seeing what hats you're wearing, you know, it can get kind of overwhelming for some of these guys. So, you know, Michigan, they locked up a pretty solid class, though.
All right. So who's your biggest losers? Let me start with you. You said your biggest loser, Shatown?
I kind of said between those right here. And like you said, too, didn't really hear too much about Miami. Like I was still saying, to me, I'm just not sold on that coach. And I think this year, really, you could be hearing some coaching changes there or whatever, or somebody want him out. Because I just didn't hear
really?
Too much about Miami.
About, really? I mean,
yeah.
I think he's done okay for what he. I mean, for
it's year number three.
Think about the situation they're in. Think about the situation that they're in. I mean, they can't go to bowls. They're going to be on restriction. I don't know what their punishment was. They filed the punishments against Miami, didn't they? Or did they not? I can't remember.
Oh, they're actually saying it might be overturned because it was tampering with the lawyer. So it might all that stuff might end up being overturned.
Oh. Well, I mean, like I said, man, under the situation, man, I mean, on potential probation, I mean, you know, it's like,
I think Miami. I mean, I'm not that impressed by the recruiting class, but I kind of, you know, like I said, they did a lot better this season than I thought they would. I think they almost finished a game out of going to a BCS bowl, didn't they?
They finished the game out of going to the championship game.
ACC.
So I mean, they did. I mean, I would keep. What's the guy's name? I can't.
Al Golden.
Al Golden, right now until at least you get off probation, man. You know what I mean? And then if they're not going to improve dramatically the way they're supposed to, then you make the move. But, you know, the biggest losers for me, let me go into the biggest losers right now for me. I think Texas, I didn't really hear too much about them. I think they were a big loser. A lot of people say USC was a big loser. No disrespect.
USC is a big loser.
What'd you say? That's what they said. That's what the Bleachers Report said. I mean, they came in with, I mean, a month ago they had the number one recruiting class in the country. And I don't know what happened.
Let me tell you guys about recruiting. The way they judge these recruiting classes is on a point system. So it goes by how many recruits you have already and you get points for them.
Right, right.
The only reason SC had the number one recruiting class was because they had that many. They had seven early enrollments, so they already had most half of their class already in already. They can only sign 15 recruits this year, but their class is averaging 4.5 stars a recruit, which is the highest average ever for any recruiting class. But they can only. I mean, you can only. You know, they've already got 13 recruits right now. You can only sign 15.
Right, right. Well, I'll say this: I think they got the best defensive end out of the state of Florida, Quentin Powell. He was going to go to Florida, and then he changed his mind and decided to go to USC. They said that today on National Sign Today. So, I mean, there's still.
I saw the only thing that really hurt me about USC's class is that we lost Jalen Ramsey to FSU. To me, that was the biggest blow because, you know, it's hard to find a number one corner like that. But, you know, other than that, I mean, Only so many guys are going to get on the field anyway, especially though, when you see that restriction
and,
going on.
And we got Tex back on here. Tex, you here? Tex, you on?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, you clear? We talking about recruiting now. Like, who are the biggest winners and losers?
I was going to ask Mike this. You think your quarterback left because of Monty Kiffin not being a defensive coordinator no more?
I mean, I don't know. It's weird because usually, like I said, I was talking to Tex about it. Usually recruits, they either like a certain kind of school. I mean, you would see USC lose a recruit to Notre Dame before you would to an FSU, just because there's those kind of guys. You know what I mean? It's a certain kind of guy that goes to a certain kind of school. You know, so usually you're not going to see it come down between FSU and USC because of the type of school they are, and of course, you know, because of location. I just think, you know, like I said, I think sometimes these kids, they just don't really know where they want to go. I mean, look at Incondici. I mean, first he declared at Clemson, then, you know, it was LSU everybody was talking about, you know, and then he ended up going, you know, to Ole Miss. So, I mean, we got to remember, you know, these are 18, 17-year-old kids, you know, trying to choose, you know, really what's going to be a major decision in most of their lives. And, you know, it's a lot of pressure. Like I said, these guys, they say, you know, because they make your, they make your Twitter and your Facebook all that public. So you got people you don't even know, you know, hitting you up on Twitter, telling you to go to this school and go to that school and, you know, make this decision and make that decision. So it can, you know, like I said, it can be kind of overwhelming, you know. But I mean, ultimately, you know, you're gonna make a decision that you think is the best for you. And, you know, so I mean, if a guy wants to choose, you know, to go to a school like FSU, I mean, there's not a problem. FSU is a quality football school, but it's just, you know, usually, like I said, for SC, you only see them, you know, it comes down between a couple other schools, and it's usually not FSU.
And it's interesting with FSU. FSU is kind of stacked at the quarterback position because Trickett's supposed to come in, and then they had a five-star recruit. They redshirted, going to be a freshman now, and now they just recruited another five-star quarterback. I don't know what they're going to do with him. So they got two five-star quarterbacks at FSU with Trickett at the allegedly going to start. So I don't know how that's going to come about at FSU.
The guy who they redshirted, he's supposed to be like the truth. I don't know how you say his first one. He is Jameis.
Yeah, he's from Alabama, yeah. But I know you're talking about Jameer or something like that. Yeah, he's supposed to be starting. Well, I don't know. I think Trick is going to start. What?
He chose FSU over Bama, right?
Yeah, he chose FSU over Alabama. I don't blame him. What the heck? I don't blame him. Maybe he's just going to hand the ball off at Alabama. So I'm just saying. So that situation is going to be interesting, too. Another situation I find interesting, too, is with UCLA. Like, USF's supposed to recruit a guy. He was the number one dual-threat quarterback in the country. He changed his mind today.
Yeah.
He changed his mind today and went to UCLA. And then I think UCLA already has a pretty good quarterback there, too. So that's going to be an interesting dynamic, too. So I don't know.
It's been a real weird – I mean, think about it. How many times have you seen it come down to USF and UCLA? I mean, it's been a really weird signing, you know. I mean, I know you're. I think it's Asante Williard or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's been a really weird signing period. You know, because I mean, you're seeing a guys. You know, their schools. You know, aren't. You know, like I say. You know, usually you won't choose. Yeah, somebody choosing between, you know, USF or UCLA. You know, it'll be UCLA or USC or, you know, or USF or Florida or something.
Yeah.
It's been kind of weird this year. But let me ask you a question. If you're a recruit, you have a kid that's a recruit, if he's a top quarterback, do you send him to the FSU that has three other quarterbacks there, or maybe do you send him to USF where he can start automatically if it's not a bigger school?
To USF where you can start automatically.
But do you think he's going to get the same exposure, same chance to make the NFL?
In this day and age, yes. I mean, if I was a quarterback and I was young, now I don't know. Maybe he wants to prove himself against the best players. He considers himself the best. That's one thing. But if I'm a quarterback and I already see somebody, like if I was the guy that went to FSU or if I was the guy that USC recruited from Washington, The state of Washington, that is. I wouldn't have went those places if they already got somebody put in place. I would have went someplace where, you know, I have a strong feeling I'm going to go in there and I'm going to be able to start a quarterback so I can prove myself and get myself some nice stats. The scouts can see it, and I probably could still be a first-round draft pick. Mm-hmm. That's my mindset, you know. Hold on, Tex, you have an opinion on this?
Well, first off, nothing's really going to be automatic. You're gonna have to butt yourself. You're gonna have to work wherever you go, and you never know what's gonna happen. You never know competition is healthy. We don't know about those quarterbacks that Florida State has. Something could happen. Maybe one transfer. Maybe one not to wish any ill will upon anybody. Maybe somebody gets hurt. Anywhere you go, you're gonna have to work for it.
Right. You're right. You're gonna have to work for it. I'm just saying, like EJ Manuel, for example. Or he had to wait 2 years behind Christian Ponder. He was the number one or number two quarterback in the country. I mean, he could have went to a school like Vanderbilt or something like that. You know, put in the same amount of work.
Do you think if he would have went to Vanderbilt and started maybe all 4 years at Vanderbilt, you think he'd be better off now than he did from starting 2 years at FSU?
I can't really answer that question. Probably, in my opinion, but I can't really answer that question. Probably.
We'll never know, but he's a – I mean,
it also depends upon, like, the quarterback coach there. Like, I mean, it all depends. All that stuff, too, plays into fact, too. And a lot of times these recruits come into these places, they get mesmerized by the facilities. They look at the nice-looking women on campus, things like that. So that's another drawing point, too, on campus also. But, I mean, if my mindset is trying to get to the pros – I'm not really trying to go. Well, I don't know. Unless that program like Alabama has a track record of right now of sending players in the first round, sort of like what Miami did in the 80s. So I can understand players wanting to go to Alabama or players wanting to go to SEC schools or whatnot. But if I'm confident in my abilities, I know I have the ability to make it to the NFL. And I feel like the best thing for me is just to go to another school and just prove myself there where I know I'm going to be able to a 3 to 4 year starter.
And, I mean, it's possible, but, you know, I mean, like I say, you got to look at it from the kid's point of view, you know. I mean, most of these kids, you know, like I say, being there's worse things than being the backup quarterback at FSU, I'll say that, you know. Yeah. I could be sure of that, you know, you're gonna get your fair share of, you know, of what's going on being the backup QB at Florida State.
I mean, because it's not that many Matt Castles in the world, man. I mean, he never started one game at USC, and he was I don't know if he was drafted or not. Was he drafted? Or was he a restricted free?
He's like
undrafted.
He was drafted.
So that's all I'm just saying, man. I mean, you know. I want to get to the league. Well, I don't know. My first and foremost, you should get an education. But these schools don't even care about you getting an education anyway, so you might as well try to get to the league. So I don't know.
Make that money. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Hold on. Tex, I want to know, what were your biggest winners and losers of the signing day?
Well, I mean, we spoke briefly about it before the show, but I think the top of the SEC was a big winner. Although people are going to try to not USC and the fans, some of the fans seem to be going out of their mind. USC still had. When I was first looking, they were tied with. Can't remember what. I think it was Alabama. At one point, they had 14 top 300. And that was tied for most in the nation. Now that number kind of changed a little bit throughout the day. But USC still had a superb class. I think they had more 5-star guys than anybody else. More four. Which was it, Mike?
Yeah, it was more 5-stars than.
They had. It wasn't even a class that was what it could have been. You understand what I'm saying? And they still go out down year with a bit of a lame duck head coach, no defensive coordinator while they're recruiting, and they sign the most five stars. And then you have Oregon.
But do they have the coaches to – all right, I don't want to interrupt. But do they have the coaches to mold those five stars? In my opinion, the difference between – do they have the coaching staff to mold those five-star recruits into the players that they need to be?
All right, if we're saying that Bama get all them guys, we ain't even talking about how they have to mold it. We just going to say they got the most five stars, and we're going to talk about how they
No, my thing is I'm not big on this whole five-star thing because the difference – like Amari Cooper, Marquise Lee, what's Teddy Bridgewater, those were not five-star recruits. They were four-star recruits. Okay, the difference – I mean, my thing is the difference between a four and a five is a five looks the part. In terms of a pro style, he looks the ideal part. But in terms of production, a four could be just as good as a five. So
in terms of production, a one or unrated could be just. I mean, it's gonna matter on the player. But you know, to get your prestige up, you're gonna want to get the top recruits at your school. You know, I mean, Boise State don't pull in the top recruits, but you know they have a decent team every year. But, you know, for most of these schools, it's a lot more about prestige. You're going to want to get the five-star recruits to come to your school to say, okay, I got this recruit, I can get that recruit, or I can, you know, your school can recruit across the country. You know, it raises the prestige level of your school, you know, to be able to say you can get the top players in the country.
The thing I'm saying is look at what USC did and look at what Oregon just did. Oregon didn't even have a top 25 class. It's just perspective. That's all I'm saying. But the losers, the winners are the SEC, Florida, Bama, Georgia, Texas A&M, Ole Miss, you know, the teams at the top, Ohio State, pulling that safety was big. That was real big. Michigan has a solid class. I guess they got to put Notre Dame up there, but fine. UT Austin. And who else kind of under? I mean, probably UT Austin. Texas A&M, I think they officially have the state of Texas now.
I don't know about that, man. That's a little far-fetched, don't you think, man?
I think they got it.
They don't have a – I mean, after 1 year, come on, man. I don't know about that, man.
You don't know.
I told you,
I don't live out there. I don't live out there, but it's hard for me to believe that the Texas A&M.
It's not hard to believe. Let Tex talk on it. It's not hard to believe.
No.
Yeah, I mean, kids are going to go to where it's hot, you know.
I just think Texas has some issues with University of Texas. You just don't like Texas for some reason. What's the animosity with Texas, man?
Hold on. The seat is hot. The seat is hot at Texas for everybody. Trust me on that.
What you say? The steam is hot?
No, I said the seat is hot.
You talking about in terms of Mac Brown?
I'm talking about in terms of Mac Brown, all the way around, man. People see these guys down here. They see Kevin Sumlin. They see what Texas A&M is doing. Everybody's paying attention, and it showed up in his class. As a matter of fact, Texas, they had a good class, but you know, for Texas, they underachieved. Had the top class in the Big 12. OU was a distant second. So, you know, people, this region is paying attention to Texas A&M. These guys are looking at Ole Miss a little bit, but. Texas A&M, telling you, they on their way to, you know, they locked it down this year. They on their way to locking Texas down. Because the jig is
up. I'm skeptical of Texas A&M because didn't they lose their offensive coordinator, their play caller, Kingsbury? So how are they going to bounce out from that?
You still got Sumlin, though. Ain't Sumlin offensive mind coach or defense?
I don't know.
They got that 6'6". Julius Peppers clone and defensive end out of Lancaster. I mean,
they still got the quarterback, so it don't matter about that, too. He's a Crosby. He's not going nowhere. Johnny Manziel.
Mike.
I mean, I don't think, I honestly, what you said, Tex? I'm sorry.
I think they're establishing a program. They had some success. These recruits started looking at A&M. They started eyeballing A&M. It was on after the LSU and Florida games, and then it was official after the Alabama game. All right. So, you know, these recruits, they're looking. They see A&M, and I'm telling you, they following. Guys are following, you know.
And I say it being true on Mac Brown, because I heard that, you know, right around the season, around the time when the bowl game season started, that it was talking about Mac Brown definitely going in next year and feeling heat. It was talking, maybe they were saying before, you know, the season had ended, people were saying, could Mac Brown been, you know, possibly be let go after this season? Because his seat is hot. I agree on that, and I heard about that, too. And also, two of the steam of Texas A&M, hey, they got a chance to play in the SEC. You got a program that's on the rise, and you got a great coach down there. I should say, I mean, the coach is showing greatness. I should say, I didn't say great yet, but, I mean, what he's done, I mean, he was a winner in Houston. I mean, what more can you ask for right there?
Yeah. Did you guys I put a post up on the CMT Firestone on Facebook website about what Chad Bumpus from Mississippi State said. Did you guys see that?
Nah.
He's telling the recruits to don't go with the money.
Yeah, I heard about that. I saw that.
After it's gone, you're stuck at a place where you don't want to be for 5 or 6 years. What do you guys think about that?
I mean, I agree with him, man. I mean, you want to be at a place where you feel like you're at home.
But what do you think about the insinuation of what he's saying though? Don't go for the money.
Well, I mean, we all know what goes down at some of these places. They give them benefits under the table. So, I mean, just don't take the benefits under the table. You don't want to be at a place, you know, just because they give you benefits under the table.
Y'all see what Desmond Howard said?
What did Desmond Howard say?
Y'all see that?
Nah.
He said it was a tweet. He was saying that Freeze finally learned how everybody down south does it.
Who?
Freeze,
oh,
the head coach at Ole Miss.
Oh.
What did he say?
He said Freeze finally figured out how they do it down south.
Well, you know the NCAA is all on them, man. You know, that's like, it could be SMU all over again, but I doubt that, though. But, I was going to say this, too.
When Tex was talking, he was saying about, you know, Lane Dunn coach. So you think Lane Kiffin's on the hot seat going into this year?
Heck yeah. Absolutely, he's on the hot seat. Absolutely.
Why he's on the hot seat? I mean, USC's still been kind of on, I mean, they still recovering from the probation.
But they were ranked number one in the nation, and I think they lost the Sun Bowl to Georgia Tech. I mean, they're on the hot seat for sure. So,
I mean, like I said,
he's on the hot seat.
He's gonna be on somewhat of a hot seat, but like I say, folks can't forget USC is coming off of a debilitating NCAA sanctions. These are the hardest sanctions that, you know, before Penn State, these were the toughest sanctions that have been laid down since, you know, SMU had a death penalty. So, I mean, it's like I say, in my opinion, it's been amazing what they've been able to do anyway, you know, just looking at their function.
Yep.
I mean, you got to look, you can only sign 15 players a year. You know, I mean, that's, you know, look at what the injuries did to them this year. I mean, you know, you can't put it all on Lane Kiffin and say, oh, such and such got hurt. You know, I mean, like I said, just for me watching the team, they couldn't even do full contact practices for most of the summer. Just because they were afraid of injuries.
Don't have players either, because don't have no scouts.
Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, that's going to affect how your team is going to perform no matter how much talent you got on the team.
Yeah, they did. And that definitely showed up, you know, this season for that team. Maybe they would have more depth.
They flopped out those, Mike, man. Ever since they lost to Stanford. I mean, to lose to Georgia Tech
in the Sun Bowl
Mike.
But like I said,
that is a direct reflection of the coaching.
Were you looking at the fact that they didn't even have their starting quarterback?
Well, yeah.
That about Barkley, yeah. He was a thing.
Back in the Sun Bowl, that's a direct reflection on coaching, man. I think he's on the hot seat. I think they want to get rid of him now. But I think they want to get rid of him now. So if they lose.
Lane Kiffin has been one of the most controversial coaches ever since he got accepted as the coach for the Raiders. Then, you know, folks are mad at what he did in Tennessee. I mean, he's gonna be in the media, and it's going to be in a negative way no matter what until he wins. Unless he can win a national championship, he's going to be, you know, and even then, he's going to still have detractors on him. You know, like I said, I mean, I'm madder than anybody else because I'm an SC fan. But I know I can't put it all on Lane Kiffin and be like, okay, let's bring
in,
you know, let's find it. Well, that's because you're not a fan and you don't watch USC games.
No, he brought this on himself. Come on, he brought this stuff on himself.
Well,
he was controversial at Tennessee.
Even at the school.
What'd you say?
How did he bring sanctions on the school? He wasn't even there.
No, I'm talking about this whole attention, all this attention, this hoopla about him.
I mean,
he brought that stuff on himself. You remember how you saw he was acting like when he was at Tennessee, saying all these bold statements, you know, challenging Florida, you know, all that stuff. What is he supposed to do? He's supposed to say, okay, I'm going to get my players ready to coach to prepare for the game. That's what he's supposed to do, like a coach should.
He's not supposed to be bold. He's not supposed to say we can beat this school, we can beat that school. I mean,
that's not in his job description. Is that in his job description? No. I'm not blaming him. Hey. What'd you say?
It's not in his job description to make their team think that they can beat anybody.
No, that's not. But saying hoopla stuff in the media is not the only way to do that. That's the point I'm saying, and you know that. So my thing is,
it's a big part of it.
No, it's not. Did you hear Nick Saban saying crazy stuff in the media? No. So my point is, I'm just saying, I predict this, all right, Cali Mike. If USC loses two games next year, he's gone before the season's over. I predict that.
I don't know about that.
I predict that. Okay, and I said it first here. I said it first here on the show.
Okay.
If they lose two games, if they lose him early, if they lose two games early, he's gone. He's gone. Okay, whatever. The rumor is that the athletic director don't even want him. So
no, it isn't.
That's not.
Did you hear that?
I heard that in the media on the Pat 40 on the ESPN when he was at ESPN said that.
I just now seen on an insider website that the Pat Hayden is firmly behind Lane Kiffin.
Well, I mean, that's the case in that. Well, hey, exactly. Who else are they going to go out and get? That's the next question after if they fire him. If and when I think they're going to fire him. Who's the next person they're going to get? But that's another conversation in itself. But hold up. That is kind of leading to our next topic here before we get into the Super Bowl. I want to know, what are your top three jobs, college jobs, football jobs in America? What do you think are the best three college football jobs in America? Let me start with you, Cali Mike.
Head coaching,
yeah.
Are we talking about now?
Well, I mean, you said, are we talking about now or when? What are you talking about?
I mean, are we talking about ideally? Or what are the head, you know, like I said, an ideal situation? Or are we talking about like now? Or, I mean, our
right now, yeah, right now. Like, what are the top three college football jobs in America? Let me tell you mine while you think. Okay.
But, I'm asking, are you asking what are the best schools? Because, I mean, that could be said
no.
What the best jobs are.
No, I mean, in terms of, like, pool, in terms of location, support system, talent, you know, pool of talent, that type of thing. Access to talent.
I don't know if that's a consideration when you talk about the best job.
If you're talking about ideally in terms of talent and support, I mean, it's going to be, I'd say, Miami, SC, and Ohio State.
Okay. What you got to say about that, Shotgun?
I'm surprised, Mike, you didn't say Notre Dame because we had that conversation, remember? When we were complaining about that. I mean,
they could be in there, but they flip coaches a lot. So, I don't, you know, I really, you know, like I say, I think if you're at either one of them three schools, you're going to have, you know, you're going to have your, you know, you're going to have your best, you know, chance of recruiting.
you know, a lot of support behind you. And, you know, I think ideally those would be my top three. I mean, Notre Dame's always going to be there because it's a flat, you know, it's one of the flagship programs. But, you know, ideally I would want to coach at one of those three before I'd be at Notre Dame.
Yeah, it makes sense because they have been at two notorious of winning them quite some time prior to this year. Well, I would say Michigan, Ohio State, and third one, I would say maybe a split between USC and Miami.
All right. Tex, let me get your opinion.
Yeah, for a coach, I'd say, for one, I'd say USC. Another one, I'm going to say Oregon. The third school, I'd like to say Miami, but you know what? To me, Miami is it's a bit like coaching at Alabama, in which you need to have somebody that can handle the outfit, that can handle the program, that understands the advantages and the disadvantages of recruiting at the school and getting guys in. I think it takes certain type of person. Huh?
What's the disadvantage of being in Alabama, being a coach at Alabama? I'm just very curious. What's the disadvantage?
Oh, it's the disadvantage of LSU, Florida, Georgia.
Okay. That's true.
That's always lingering. But that goes back to what I'm saying. Yeah, a certain type of guy, a certain type of coach that, you know, that 6-hour radius within Tuscaloosa campus, lock it down and keep the guys there because there's a hotbed of talent, like a bigger version of what South Florida is like, But if I have to say a job, I probably have to say Miami. If it's the right person, I'd have to say USC, and I would probably have to say Oregon. I'd probably have to give an honorable mention to Notre Dame because, I mean, if you're winning, and that's a big if you're winning, then, I mean, you got to make – I can't say anything more about that.
All right.
Go ahead, Carzell.
Yeah, I think Florida's the best job. I think Florida's number one in my opinion. I got Notre Dame number two, and then I'm going to say Texas or Alabama number three. But I'll give the nod to Texas because it's right in the middle of Texas. And I don't think, even though you're saying A&M is beating them now, but I think, you know, under the right personnel, Texas is still sort of the school in the state of Texas with the largest alumni base, whereas Florida is the school in Florida with the largest alumni base. Notre Dame speaks for itself, you know, with the national reputation or whatnot. And then Alabama with the facilities. But Texas has a point. You're going to be battling against the Mississippi States. You're going to battle against the LSUs. I mean, you're kind of swamped in the middle of all these SEC schools that are trying to tug at your players.
You said that, but then you also said that Urban Meyer left Florida for the same thing. So how can you put Florida up there?
He wasn't the guy. He couldn't sell the ship right for some reason. He wasn't selling the ship right no more.
National
I mean,
championship coach there.
Hey, well, when Les Miles and Nick Saban figured it out, he wasn't winning that much no more. He ran and went to Ohio State because he knew he could not compete in the SEC anymore. He knew it. I know it. I was watching this closely.
Crazy, right?
Whatever. You can say what you want, man. I was watching the game.
Whatever,
right?
Yeah.
We can go over this again, man. We don't have a show that much longer, so we want to put this to the rest here. Trust me. I was watching the games, man. This dude could not handle the culture of the SEC anymore. That's why he was getting sick. You know, that's why he ran into Ohio State because he knew he couldn't compete against Les Miles.
Miles
and Nick Saban,
right?
He knew
Miles,
it.
Miles and Saban did start playing in the backyard, and then they extended all the way down to southern Florida.
Right. I mean, he wasn't the guy that could sell the ship no more.
I can't say that because he just pulled the safety from. I mean, he just pulled from Florida today.
You guys got to realize, Clausell is crazy.
Whatever, man. You can say I'm crazy all you want to, man, but I'm just saying that. Okay, he did. He pulled it. What I'm saying is
not reaching down here and touching it. So what is he running from? Ohio State is an excellent job, by the way.
Well, yeah, it's an excellent job. But it's easier to compete against a Michigan and nobody else in the Big Ten than to compete against the whole country coming to your state. The whole country's coming to pluck your players within a 7 to 8 mile radius of where your campus is. The whole country.
That can be said about UT too. Everybody go to Texas. I mean, people gonna go over there now that try to get the recruits. Everybody go to Texas, California, Florida, Georgia. Mm-hmm. That can be said about plenty of schools. Now, come on.
Oh, okay. I'm not getting this. I'm not getting into this anymore. But I'm just saying he was getting blowed out by Les Miles and Nick Saban. That's why he left.
He was getting blown out.
And that's not true what I'm saying. He wasn't getting blown out by Nick Saban and Les Miles towards the ends of his time at Florida. Is that not true?
No.
Okay. All right. Go back and do your research. Look at the games. Look at the last time Les Miles played Florida and LSU. The last two times Les Miles played Florida and LSU, and you look at the scores. But now that we got that out the way.
I got one quick question. Texas A&M, is that near Houston, Texas? Like College Station is near the Houston area?
No, not really.
It's near Dallas?
No, it's south. It's out there. It's Bryan. It's College Station. It's not really by Houston. It might be closer to San Antonio than Houston.
Mm. That's Concord Town, South Texas, huh?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, San Antonio is further south. Bryan College Station is only about 3 hours from here. San Antonio is about 4 hours. Austin is about 2.5, 3 hours.
And Houston about 4 or 5 hours, right?
Houston is about 4, 4.5. Just depends.
All right, let's get into the Super Bowl. Let's do a little recap on the Super Bowl. What are your thoughts on the game? And just tell me what your thoughts on the game was. Let me start with you, Cali Mike.
I mean, it was, you know, it didn't go the way I wanted it to go, of course. But, you know, it played out kind of like I thought it would. You know, except for, of course, I thought that Kaepernick was going to throw that last-minute touchdown to Randy Moss. But, you know, I mean, the Niners, their second-half team, I mean, if you look at it, I mean, you look at that, everybody was surprised and, you know, going crazy when they made the comeback, but, you know, they make second-half adjustments. All you got to do is look at the Atlanta game, and you see the same thing. You know, the only difference to me is you can't do that with a veteran team like the Ravens. It's not going to, you know, especially, you know, like I said, in the last two calls that Harbaugh made, you know, it's questionable. In my opinion, you got to have Kaepernick, you know, you got to have him run that ball in.
Yeah.
When you're 3 yards away, I got to take my chances against him going up against the DB. But, you know, I mean, like I said, it could have went either way. Two tough teams played. Ravens came out on top.
Also, too, I was going to say, since you talk about that, I'm surprised that they was kind of talking about it on a post-game show. They were saying, like, on that play, why you all didn't try to run it? Or, you know, at least one wanted to play, try to give it to Frank Gore on that last drive down the goal line.
I just want to say this real quick. I was sitting back looking at the game, and there was a friend at the place I was watching it at. We always talk football, and I told him exactly what the Ravens were going to do, and they did exactly that. And I'm like, look here. When they come out on that first down and get to the line, if it's a bad look, call a timeout. They let Kaepernick snap that ball. Should have called a timeout. You should have
agreed.
Should have been on the sideline. Look here. You're going man across. You're getting a zero blitz. You're going to have Ed Reed coming off the edge, which is what happened. Told my dude that would happen. Should have called a timeout because it was, you know, like Belichick told Brady. He was like, look here. If it's a shitty look, call a timeout. And then we're going to find out what we need to do.
Even if it's not shitty looking or not, that's pretty much could be the game right there to make sure everybody's on point on what they need to do and, you know, just group and see it since that pretty much was a play that, you know, that pretty much was pretty much in the game for them on that play right there. Yeah, I was surprised that they didn't call a timeout on that play. But also, too, you know, you all remember the drive when they fumbled. You know, let's say San Francisco was going to kind of get some points on that one. The way it was going, I thought they was probably going to score a touchdown when LaMichael James fumbled. That play come back to hunt them, you know, with that turnover, because, I mean, they had that groove going on, that momentum, and it kind of messed it up after when they had fumbled that ball. And it was a late, how they, and it was late too, how it picked up, because at first we thought, okay, and they looked at it and said, yeah, that's a free ball. We're like, what? So it was a fumble ball, because at first, okay, they were saying the way it looked, it might have been down, but then they looked at it and they showed the replay, yeah, that was a free ball.
Now, let's talk about the end of the game where, you know, the controversial penalty or non-call holding against some people said that play should have been a hold or whatnot. I want to know, what do you think? You think the ref should have called a hold or a pass interference?
I didn't see a hold.
You didn't see a hold?
I saw Michael Crabtree. At first, I'm thinking, oh, man, you know, Kaepernick has to, you know, he has to put some touch on that ball. It has to hit the spot. But where ideally, from the play call, where the ball was going was actually where it had to be. I mean, you think about where it landed. It landed in the corner where the safety wasn't at and where the cornerback was behind it. I think Crabtree just had to run his route. You know, he quit on the route. The guy was holding him, and he stopped running. Keep running. You probably get a flag. But Crabtree stopped on the route. I didn't see any holding. But I did that. I know it's nothing to do with what we're talking about. That call on Culliver was a bad call.
What call are you talking about on which play?
On Bolden, on the 39. Incomplete pass.
Are you talking about that big third down conversion on Baltimore made?
Yeah, they didn't make no conversion. They got a flag that gave them the conversion. Mike, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What quarter was it? You talking about in the third quarter, fourth quarter?
Yeah.
So I was thinking about on the flag when they called. What down was it?
It doesn't make no difference, but
I'm still trying to remember. I don't remember the play you're talking about.
You know, I think the last play. I mean, like I said, I'm always an advocate of if you don't want your game to come down between a play like that, don't put yourself in that position. You know, and even me as like in the Niners, I can't. You know, like I say, people were saying it was within 5 yards or whatever, this and that. You know, just don't put yourself in that position where a hole can stop you. You know, like I said, I mean, that's all I can put it as. I mean, I can't, you know, I've said it all season long, you know, if you don't want that to happen to your team, don't put yourself in that position. So I just got to say it again this time. I just think, like I said, I thought that they would have to go and let Kaepernick make a play with his feet, though. I mean, I think that's, you know, that to me, like I said, I would have ran that three straight times, you know, bootleg him out there and see what he can do. You know,
bad
put. And,
well, at least trying to get to Vernon Davis because they couldn't counter Vernon Davis.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if I'd have went to Vernon Davis in that position right there. I mean, like Tech said, the throw he made wasn't that bad of a throw. I would have just said, you know, I would have, you know, I would have just had to tell him to go at his feet instead of a throw, though. In my opinion, too much can happen, you know, when you put the ball up in there. Too much craziness. But, you know, like I said, I don't know. I might even have to have Randy Moss over on that side, too, you know, just for the height.
Randy Moss, I mean, I don't know, the way he was playing, though, man. Would you want Randy Moss over there, man, the way he was playing?
I mean, he made some catches.
I
would have, too.
You know, try to get a mismatch, you know.
I mean.
Well, you know, you got to go all out. This is, you know, like I say, if it's not open, then Cap has to make a play on his feet, you know. But, you know, give yourself all chances to win. Don't just have one guy over there and you're rolling to that side and that's it, you know.
I mean, I was gonna say I think it was contact on that, but the ball really, like Tex was saying, and Mike, it really wasn't, you know, it wasn't thrown, even if it wasn't the whole Crabtree still wasn't gonna catch it. So on that particular play, you know, I mean, the seeing it again and again, our first game it was. What were you saying, Mike?
I think he was going to catch that.
Yeah.
Oh, Crabtree?
That play was going to be a touchdown. If he fights through the contact, he probably gets to the corner of the end zone. Crabtree can make
I
guess maybe the way how he ran, like you said, like on his route, though, maybe if he would have still maybe would have went full harder, they might would have Mike would have thrown the flag on that play.
Yeah.
If he was, because he did kind of stop, he didn't go full straight on the route.
All right, hold on.
But I was gonna say on that play, like I was saying, like at least you know when they had the first down, some of the play call, like I kind of agree. I thought they should have took a shot one play, maybe run the ball on one of the plays. Instead of constantly throwing on both plays, you still had time. And also, at least one of the plays, I'm not saying the last play of the game, or at least try to look at Vernon Davis. I mean, Baltimore couldn't count on him. You know, when he was making plays, I mean, he, you know, that's the time, you know, in the end zone where you want to have your tight end, and they had a tight end. So I was just kind of surprised that on some of the play calls on that.
Look here, man, it's like Mike said, it's bad coaching at the end. Man, I'm telling you, I'm giving Kaepernick options with his legs down there in that situation.
Yeah, true.
Let me put James here. Let me see what James has to say. All right, James.
Allow me to quote Young Jeezy when I say, "Yeah, I told y'all the Ravens would take this one, man. I tried to tell y'all." But man,
I mean, it was a good game.
Yeah, it did end up getting close, but I mean, San Francisco pretty much, you know, started off on a bad foot to begin the game, even with that penalty for the very first play of the game. Like I said, I thought they had pretty much jitters to start off with, and Baltimore started off calm and cool. Quarterback started off calm and cool, making all of his throws, especially the third down throws. He pretty much, like, made six straight third and, you know, conversion plays that they had that pretty much, you know, set the tone for the first half of the game. And they pretty much had most of the momentum going in until, you know, that blackout. And then once that happened, I think a lot of that, you know, adrenaline and juice pretty much got sapped out of them. And San Francisco had their opportunity to catch their breath and be like, okay, this is a football game. Let's just play the game, and everything will come to us. And that's what pretty much got them back in the game. They were able to calm down in the third quarter, and they were able to play their game.
I want to have a question, James. You remember Tex was saying about the play about the cover penalty. Do you remember what play of that penalty on Anquan Boldin?
Well, it was in the fourth quarter, and Baltimore was, like, deep in their own territory. And I think it was, like, one of the, like, the first third down they had. And,
39.
Yeah, it was, like, a 39, and then, you know, it was, like, a pass play that was going out to Anquan Boldin. And they called holding on, what was that quarterback, cornerback's name again?
Culver.
Yeah, Culver. So, you know, once they gave him, you know, that holding call on that third and nine, then that pretty much gave him the first time to give him more, you know.
Oh, I remember that play now. I thought on that play, I thought Boldin still made the catch, though, right, on that play?
Hmm.
No, he didn't make the catch.
Okay, but now I know what play you're talking about. Yeah, because I was seeing it now, but, yeah, that definitely changed it. Because let's say they didn't make that call and San Francisco made the stop. San Francisco had the momentum. They probably went on to score, you know, another touchdown.
Right. I mean, yeah, I mean, that pretty much, you know, throws off the whole psyche of the Baltimore defense. They're going to be going back on the field with short rest. So, yeah, that could have really, you know, changed things up a little bit. As far as, like, the whole thing about, you know, San Francisco's last goal-to-goal drive, I think they should have included one zone replay in that four downs that they had. I mean, running it to Frank Gore down the middle, that wasn't really going to work because, yeah, most of the Baltimore defense pretty much stacked in that whole set.
And
you got to spread it out a little bit to have them guessing somewhat.
Now, I got a question. I'm gonna keep you on hold here. I'll keep you online, James. The lights coming off in the third quarter. Do you think it had an effect on San Francisco coming back in the game?
Well,
let me start with you. Let me start with you, Jamal. Well, yeah, you can go first, James. Let James go first.
Oh no, I mean I already pretty much said it. You know, I mean that made San Francisco pretty much catch their breath. Be like, hold on a minute, it's a football game. We can take this one at a time because, I mean, the whole momentum was with Baltimore at that point. They had that long kickoff return for a touchdown. You know, they were able to stop San Francisco. It was a bend but don't break defense. Yeah, I mean, San Francisco was getting yards, but they weren't scoring touchdowns. And so they're like, oh, now we can see if we can execute, do this, do that, and they were able to do that. And the defense was able to catch up, too, because they were able to make some plays.
Jamal, what's your take on this?
You know, maybe Frisco, I guess, maybe they caught their breath. But people need to understand, man, since Jim Harbaugh came into the league, San Francisco has been probably the best second half adjustment team in the NFL. The return to me, the Ravens had momentum. It was a bit flukish. Should have been a flag for Bruce Miller. Bruce Miller was held and he was mugged. The Ravens held and mugged him. Should have been the flag on that. I don't know how the refs missed that. So, you know, Ravens got away with one right there. But, maybe Frisco did catch their breath. You see what I'm saying? I mean, I didn't see, even when they come out of the half, they're on the sidelines when the blackout. I don't see CK huddled up with anybody. Nobody going over sight adjustments. Nobody going over anything. I think these guys, the Ravens got away with a penalty on a kick return. I think Frisco adjusted, came out, and played their game. I mean, remember, it's not a fluke that they came back. I don't know if the blackout was because of that, because Frisco always comes out in the second half, and they always kick ass after making adjustments at halftime. Always. Never, ever fail.
I agree. It kind of made it gave them something, you know, give them a breather because with that delay and stuff like that. But, you know, like we all said, it was going to be a, you know, great-ass game. It's a Super Bowl. So, I mean, they were talented. So, I mean, I knew they were going to make a run. I was going to say also, too, I think Baltimore got a break early on the first drive when San Francisco was down in the red zone. What was that guy's name? I can't think of his name. Luger. I think he was offside. We had sacked on Kaepernick. I think he jumped off a bit early, and I think the referees missed that one when he sacked Kaepernick. I think that should have been offside on him. I'm surprised they missed that call, too. In fact, that was back in the first quarter San Francisco settled for the field goal.
Yeah, I mean, as far as penalty is concerned, I think, you know, the refs pretty much, like, held the flags in their pocket, especially when it came to holding, because I think that was only that one holding call was probably the only one that was called all game, and there was, like, a lot of instances when they could have called holding on. At least Baltimore, I know that, but, I mean, I just saw it all game. I mean, people were holding left and right, and the refs were like, okay, y'all can do that. It don't matter.
No. Other than that, though, but that's one thing I can say, though. I'm glad, I mean, the officials knew it was a Super Bowl. I'm just glad they let them play, too. You know, if it's going to be, you know, if you're going to call it fair, be fair with it. So maybe it was a call they didn't make on one of the calls. They know they messed up. They would have to be fair with that team. They had to make it fair with them since they missed it. You know how sometimes they miss a call, and they know they messed up, and they got to be fair with the other team.
Okay. Now going forward, with the Ravens. Oh, you want someone had something to say? Or maybe not. Something's breaking up on the phone. But now going forward, with the Ravens particularly, and Joe Flacco, he's going to be up for a contract. What do you think the Ravens should do? Should they franchise him or sign him to the long-term extension? Let me get Kelly Mike's opinion on this.
I think we kind of hit on it last week. You know, we're saying you might have to pay him, but I forgot about the new
the new cap that they put on the franchise tag. You know, I was thinking that, you know, I think me and Tex were thinking, both of us were thinking about the old tag. I think Steve was right. I think the new tag is around like $14 million, I think, for QB. So, you know, I think, I mean, but, you know, like I said, you know, I mean, how long do you want to do that? If, you know, if you think this is your quarterback, you know, you sign him. You know, if not, you know, you figure out something else to do. I mean, if, you know, if all way, you know, if they think this is their quarterback, continue leading them to Super Bowls, then, you know, you sign them to a contract. You know, if not, you know, then, yeah, you franchise them. Maybe see who else you can get. But, you know, like I say, you also have to look and see, can you get a better player than Joe Flacco? You know, can you get, you know what I mean? You have to make sure you can get somebody else to come in there. You know, you just won a Super Bowl. You don't want to come off and go flat. You know, you're already going to have to replace Ray Lewis. So, you know.
Well, okay. What's your take on this, Shutdown?
Well, again, we were talking about this last week. I mean, I told James, James, you still on it, right?
Yeah.
I was telling James last week that I think there's more pressure on him to this game since he, you know, going to be a free agent, and, you know, he wants to get paid big money like Peyton Manning. Well, he wants to be the highest paid quarterback. And I say he got to win that game. So now he has leverage.
He
played well. He didn't throw no interception. And, you know, he set a record in the postseason, too. I think he broke Joe Montana's record. I mean, he played well. I mean, he showed, you know, signs of last year of improving. So, I mean, I think he definitely, I would try to lock him long term. You know, but he talking about he want to be paid like Drew Brees. And, I still don't think he's played at elite level, but I still don't think he's an elite quarterback when you put in the class of Aaron Rodgers, you know, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady. But, you know, that's the only thing. He said he wants to be paid like Drew Brees. And, you know, Drew Brees is the highest paid right now. So, I mean, do you think he's worthy like a Drew Brees? I mean, his contract definitely is going to have an impact on the team because there's other players they got to sign. That's the only thing I got with. But I think he definitely worthy of a nice contract. Maybe not the money range of a Drew Brees, but somewhere around up there, you know, getting paid.
Well, I don't think they should pay him Drew Brees money, but, I mean, they should give him a nice little increase. I mean, pay him, I don't know who the top five highest paid quarterbacks are. I mean, I would give him on that slightly below Drew Brees number just the fact he won a Super Bowl, but,
Brees,
you know, put it.
Brees, Manning, Brady, and other Manning.
Yeah, like maybe Eli Manning number or something like that. I mean, I wouldn't
make him
the highest paid quarterback in the league. I mean, that's like crazy. I mean, I pay him probably Eli Manning's pay, but I would, you know, have it contingent. You know, you could release him after two, three years without losing that much money.
Eli's getting paid too. Eli's getting around 16 or 17 too, isn't he?
Yeah.
I don't know. But,
no,
I mean, I pay him
not,
something.
It's a million, you know, $1 million difference. I mean, like I say, if they think it's their quarter, I mean, let's say this: is there a chance of them getting Drew Brees? Is there a chance of them getting any of those guys we named? If not,
yeah, because you won a Super Bowl.
They had a chance to get Peyton Manning. They didn't try to make a run after Peyton Manning. So hey, you know, that's showing how I feel about Flacco. So I mean, yeah, if he's your guy, then you definitely got to pay him. But I just think, you know, if they pay him around with him being the highest paid quarterback, I think they made a mistake right there. Like I said, I don't think he's in that level of the guys we mentioned, but I mean, I say he's an above average quarterback. I compare him to an Eli Manning.
You know, like I said before,
right,
you know, with these guys' contract, like I said with basketball, you know, you got to find who you can sign, man. I use a basketball analogy. When Joe Johnson signed with Atlanta and when Rudy Gay signed with Memphis, everybody was, you know, balling out about their contracts. But is Atlanta or Memphis going to ever sign LeBron James? No. So they got to sign who they can sign. Maybe Baltimore is never going to get, you know, Drew Brees. Like I say, are they going to get any of those guys? No. So they got to get who they can get. You know, if that's their guy, you know, they got to pay him.
Hold on. Let me James in here. What's your take on this?
Well, I mean, I think Baltimore pretty much has to, you know, think of a long-term contract for him. I don't think putting the franchise tag on him is going to work out well for him, I think. Because, I mean, as far as, like, I've heard from some reports, I think putting the franchise tag on him would probably cost him more in this year's, you know, salary cap than, you know, signing him to a long-term contract, which would, you know, prevent him from signing other players. As far as, like, his quarterback worth is concerned, I mean, he did have, you know, a great postseason, but it wasn't like he had a really good regular season. As far as I know, he had a fairly low QBR, you know, compared to the other big guys, you know, Rodgers and, you know, Breeze and Manning and stuff like that. He wasn't, you know, among that list. So you got to also take that into account as far as, like, you know, a long-term commitment towards Joe Flacco.
So let me ask you this, Jan. Like I said, I've always said the same thing about Ben Roethlisberger. I mean, when has Ben Roethlisberger ever had an MVP-type regular season?
Yeah, when the year he went to the Super Bowl. I mean, not statistically, but impact on the game he did. I mean, he was leading
his
team.
We're talking about that. Like, hold on, you got to listen to what we're talking about. We're talking about when has he ever had an MVP-type season to where we were like, this guy is a big, but, you know, he's constantly mentioned among elite quarterbacks.
Yeah, because
he is.
He comes out.
He don't have the numbers like, of course, like you could say Peyton Manning or Brady or Rodgers type. But I mean, but he still won big games and he makes the plays.
He makes plays.
So Joe
Flacco
doing the same thing, right?
I don't see him caring like Big Ben is carrying.
I'll answer the question for you guys. Yes, he just won the Super Bowl. Yes, he does do the same thing. He just won the Super Bowl.
No, I mean, but consistently game by game throughout the season. That's what that year Pittsburgh won the Super Bowl when they beat Arizona.
Yeah.
Like, it was like almost an every week thing, man. Ben Roethlisberger would like lead his team to victory. Like,
but you already knew what he was going to do
every game. So, and it just like that game in the Super Bowl, it was like that every game. Hello.
Yeah.
Hello.
Okay. I've been underwhelmed by Roethlisberger during the regular season for many years now. Yeah. He's only thrown over 30 touchdowns once. You know, he throws around, you know, 15 picks a year. You know, I mean, like I say, he's not a good regular season player. You know, he's a Super Bowl caliber. You know, clearly a Super Bowl caliber quarterback. But if he gets paid, Flacco got to get paid.
But Flacco's not. I don't think as good as Ben Roethlisberger. You got to say, ability wise. I mean, Ben, how you grab a mobile?
You haven't given me any reasons why, isn't he?
They show you right there what he's done. I mean,
Ben is. I mean, Flacco. This season was Flacco's good season.
Keep in mind, you're talking about a quarterback that just now won his team the Super Bowl.
Right. This season, like I said, this season was a very good. Well, I wouldn't say it was a good season. I mean, the playoffs was a good playoffs for
him. Postseason, yeah. He probably had the best
season.
He had the best postseason than anybody. Yeah, he had a better postseason than anybody. They showed statistically this past postseason.
Whereas Ben Roethlisberger, it was like a weekly thing where he would like have to lead his team back in clutch situations. He hasn't really necessarily done that in the past few years, but maybe one year. But I mean, that's what his reputation was on, leading his team in clutch situations. No,
you're talking about Flacco. Do you think Flacco was better than Matt Ryan? Throughout the Super Bowl and everything, do you think Flacco and talent ability wise is better than Matt Ryan?
You're complicating things too much. You can't say without the Super Bowl. He just won the Super Bowl. He's the Super Bowl MVP right now. So you can't say without. It doesn't matter without the Super Bowl. You can't do that. You could have said that 4 weeks ago, but you can't say that now.
Look at his
team right now. Right now, because he's at the pinnacle of football. Right now, you have to pay that man.
I don't mind them getting paid. I mean, but you got to replace Ray Lewis. You might have to replace Ed Reed. You pay them, but you're going to lack something else. You know, who are you going to get, Manti Te'o? I think they should get Manti Te'o to replace Ed Reed. I mean, not Ed Reed, but
okay,
Ray Lewis.
No. Don't, please.
All right.
Don't get started.
No.
Why not? I was going to lead into the next conversation, man. But anyway.
Because I thought, the reason why I say that, though, too, because look at Matt Ryan. He's a free agent, too. And if you have to say between skill and ability and looking at the numbers he's at, Matt Ryan blows Joe Flacco off the mountain.
He has a year. He's not a free agent. He has 1 year left.
So you're talking about Matt Ryan? They already talked about his contract.
Once again, Joe Flacco is a Super Bowl winner and Super Bowl MVP.
I thought they could have gone to Anquan Boldin too, because he made some big catches.
Well, let me say something real quick. I'm gonna clear this up about elite, not elite, and Super Bowl quarterback. First off, Flacco had a solid regular season. Now you have to understand.
No, he didn't.
He was solid. 22 touchdowns. 10 interceptions. That's, you know, those are solid numbers. You look at quarterbacks and you talk about what makes them elite. Regular season production is part of that, but then you have certain elements, what I like to call elements of the win during big games that brings over the top. With Roethlisberger and Eli Manning, it's the third and longs, it's the clutch factor. With Joe Flacco, now you can see it's the coolness. You understand what I'm saying? It's just the cool and the big arm. And I think he's underrated as an accurate quarterback. But there's the preparation of Peyton Manning and the ice water in Brady's veins. I mean, there's different elements making guys elite like they are. Now, the one thing about whether or not Flacco should be paid Drew Brees type money, if a guy is your guy, then there's no amount that you cannot pay him. It's no different than moving up in the draft and trying to get Robert Griffin or trading something and getting Julio Jones. Now, provided Julio Jones is a wide receiver, but if you have a guy and you think that guy is a big piece, part of that puzzle, a big piece of you going and getting to where you need to go, I don't know if there's an amount that you would not pay him. And Flacco is, what, 25 years old? He's a young quarterback.
Yeah.
He's not even into his prime yet. So you have Drew Brees, who's 32, 33, getting $23 million. You have a guy who might get $20 million in Flacco that's 8 years younger, that's not in his prime yet. And this guy has been on the doorstep for 3 years and running to get to a Super Bowl and try to win it. Let's not discount that. And he just went over the top, and he smoked one of the best defenses in the National Football League. I'm not going to call him elite. But is he worth $20 million? Hey, to the Ravens, probably so. You know how hard it is to win a Super Bowl? It's hard.
It's close.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Like we were saying last week, like, you know, with Mike, when we were talking about the rings and stuff, people understand, yeah, I mean, it's hard to get to a Super Bowl, man.
I mean,
I think it's harder than sports to me.
Sometimes people, you know, they talk about this stuff, and they talk about, that's why I'm just so extra bullish on quarterback play. I mean, notorious for talking about quarterbacks and how they play. It's hard to win a Super Bowl. It's hard to field a roster. It's hard just to get a decent quarterback. I didn't say a good quarterback. I said a decent quarterback. You understand what I mean? It's tough. That's why it's important that when you have a guy like Flacco like this, you know, you catching, I like to call it catching hell, which is a guy that's 25, not even in his prime, playing quarterback, going and winning Super Bowls. You know what I'm saying? If you catching hell, then you spit fire at everybody else. You know what I'm saying? You gotta pay the guy. You know what I'm saying?
Also, they invested their first round in him too. So you know how it is. You taking quarterback in the first round, so he's your guy. So he's finally led you to the promised land.
Well, regardless of what round he comes in, the guy has delivered. All right, he's delivered, and you know, And Baltimore will take care of Joe Flacco. I guarantee you that. Ozzie Newsome runs things up there. He understands.
Yeah.
He knows.
All right.
Also, I was going to say, I guess, I don't know, everybody knew, though, even though it don't mean nothing because they didn't win, but Kaepernick, you know, the numbers was better than Flacco. He had 300-something yards. So, I mean.
He didn't have a better game.
I mean, I just say game. I just say yards because he did throw the interception, but he had 300-something yards. But it don't mean nothing when we don't win the Super Bowl.
All right, let's. I want to move on here. Who are your early favorites maybe to win the Super Bowl next year? Let's start with James.
Oh boy. Everybody's, you know, pretty much automatically picking the 49ers coming in.
Everybody would be correct, sir.
Yeah, so, I mean, I got them as my favorite from the NFC. I mean, I think, you know, they have the whole nucleus to come back once again next year. As far as, like, the AFC goes, it's, as far as I'm concerned, it's a toss-up right now. I don't know if Denver will probably come back or New England or anything like that. But, like I said, I mean, the 49ers is pretty much my pick as far as I know. I have to wait till the schedules come out and everything and what happens in the next few months to pretty much get a concrete look of, you know, who else will be a favorite.
All right. I got the 49ers coming out of the NFC. I think Seattle's going to make a buzz. I got Atlanta coming. They're going to be up for it. I think Baltimore's going to fall down. New England, obviously. I think Pittsburgh will make a comeback. And that's all I have right now at the AFC. I can't think of it. I can't put Denver up in there. I won't put them in there. Next. Let me go with Tex.
Well, you never know what's going to happen. You at face value, you're probably going to say San Francisco. They'll be right there. I was looking at the Vegas odds. Vegas seems to favor Frisco, Denver, Green Bay, New England. So, and New Orleans is up there, too. That's another team I think that rebounds is New Orleans, by the way.
Getting Rob Ryan, he definitely gonna help.
Well, should have went with Romeo Crennel, but he doesn't officially have the job just yet, so hold off on that.
They talking about Romeo Crennel too to be there?
Well, it's not you know set in stone that it's Rob Ryan's job, and it shouldn't be over Romeo Crennel. You can't be serious. But anyways. But that's who Vegas has odds on. That's who are the favorite teams in Vegas. But I mean, I really don't know. I would think Frisco would be there. But you know, this next season is, you know, this is a test for Kaepernick. Teams have you on film, so you know you have to. And this is hardball too, you guys. I mean, the playbook has to expand a little bit. I'd like to see him get rid of this pistol because, I mean, the Ravens were dead. The Ravens were dead set on the pistol. Never mind the running back. Just hit Kaepernick. Just hit him.
That's
teams
true.
Are gonna look at that. Teams are going to look at that. That's why I'm not. You know, this little pistol thing, man. I mean, and they average 8 yards per play, but, you know, Baltimore, heady, smart coaches. I bet you they hammered that when they were on the sideline. Hit Kaepernick. Hit him. I know I would be if I were playing the Niners, but, you know, yeah. But, Frisco, you know, the organization, I mean, it's a solid organization. Balky is a master at, manipulating the salary cap for what he wants it to look like as far as what they're going to do with the team and who they're going to pay. I mean, they have it in order. These guys are not at a loss for, you know, having smart-headed people that know how to run the franchise. So they're going to draft. They're going to do whatever they do in free agency. They're going to scout. They're gonna fix whatever issues they have. They're going to say goodbye to whoever they need to say goodbye to. It's a solid coach team. I mean, for all of that, they'll be right back where they were probably.
All right. Kelly, Mike, I think you're next.
I look at the Niners. Clearly, you know, just because they're, you know, not going to really lose anybody. They're coming off the Super Bowl. I want to wait. I got to see where some of these free agents are going to go. Reggie Bush and Steven Jackson, too. I want to see where he's going to go. I'd like to see maybe, like, I think if Green Bay or New Orleans could end up with a decent running back, I think that could really change their team. Change the dynamic of their offense. I mean, I think, you know, I'd like to see Steven Jackson on really, I like him in Green Bay more. But, you know, like I said, I think maybe he has, you know, I think he can go to a team and be like Corey Dillon was in New England in his final couple of years, you know. So, I'd like to see him get to the Super Bowl. I think he's probably been the most underrated running back maybe I've ever seen since I've been watching football.
Otis Anderson? No, I was just saying Otis Anderson, but keep going.
Oh, man.
I had to throw that in there. I'm sorry.
Like I say, when you look at the combination of the Steven Jackson brings in power and speed, that's, you know, he's supposed to be an all-time running back, you know, and he really, you know, he's been playing on some bad teams and, you know, and hasn't really had a chance to, you know, to be in that spotlight. But I don't know. I'm sitting here and I'm looking at these Carolina Panthers too. I think if they can get some rush coming on, make some changes on their D line. I just think a team that has Cam Newton at quarterback. You know, they always, you know, if he can play, you know, he can play right. Which I was looking at the season. Everybody said he had a down season, but he actually statistically had almost a better. Well, he actually statistically did have a better season than he had last year. But, you know, I think, you know, that team, you know, like I said, if they make the right moves, maybe bring in a running back, you know, and, you know, get a couple of pass rushers out of the draft, you know, I think that could be a team that, you know, could definitely make a run to the playoffs and, you know, could be, you know, make a definite improvement over themselves. But out of the AFC, I mean, you're going to have the favorites, you know, the Pittsburgh will come back. They're going to be healthy. Pats are going to be there again. And, you know, I'm not too sure about how long Denver we're gonna keep the old man on the field with Peyton Manning, Willis McGahee. But, you know, like I say, infusion at running back, maybe get a Reggie Bush in there. You never know.
Okay. Now
gotta talk about me.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry, Shatan. I'm sorry.
Yeah, more points to it. So I got a question for Tech. So Romeo Cornell, he's interested in being the Saints defensive coordinator, or the Saints are interested in him?
Cornell and Rob Ryan, and I haven't seen anything official saying Rob Ryan is the guy.
Now, I agree 100% with Tech on that. If Cornell's the guy, cause I thought they were saying that he was going to retire. You know, Cornell's your guy. He got the jewelry, the rings. He's the better guy. So yeah, they better punch on Cornell for on that part. Anyway, the Saints, like I was saying, you know, the way it is, you know, my heart was saying the Ravens and the head was saying the 49ers. I mean, at least I'm happy the Ravens won, but I think the 49ers got a better chance of being back in the Super Bowl next year than the Ravens with their youth, you know, their much younger team. And, you know, right now, like I said, I think they got a dynasty going on there. They're going to be competitive for a while, you know, because the only question we had with them was, you know, was the quarterback. You know, they got Kaepernick. You know, so if they just kind of keep the team together, maybe add a little something more, and I guess have experience since they, you know, losing the Super Bowl, I think that's going to help them out. So I kind of think they have a good chance, but again, it's still early. It's a long season. We just had the Super Bowl this past Sunday, so I'm not even thinking about, you know, for next year. You know, we still got, you know, the combine and the draft and free agency. I mean, free agency and the combine and the draft and all that type of stuff to, you know, figure all that out. Donovan McNabb, you know, said on NFL Network today, a team who didn't make the playoffs that has a chance to get to the Super Bowl. Of course, he's going to say the Chicago Bears. I mean, the Bears, let's say we do well in free agency, I mean, most likely in the draft and maybe add a little something to the offense and maybe, but I still hold on to that for the other team, you know.
He did say
on NFL Network today. Well, I just think we need to, you know, of course we got to add.
I didn't know
Donovan
McNabb was doing that bad life. Wow.
And they add some more to our offense. I mean, I look at my team was 10-6. Didn't make the playoffs. I mean, okay. You know, he's going to show everybody respect. You know, I guess when he win it, then that's when he'll get it. But we hold on to that. We still got some work to do. We still got some work to do on the offensive line side of the ball. So we still got some work. So
you know how your team gets respect is by beating teams that are going to contend for the playoffs, and not just beat the teams that like the really really bad teams.
Yeah,
that's how you get that.
Yeah, I was a fan of the Bears at the beginning of the year, but you know they just wavered off, man. And now they lost their coach. I mean, they could fall to the gutter of the NFC North.
Sure,
now,
really, I mean, I agree with Carlisle. I get that kind of vibe, dude. I think that team could easily fall apart.
Mark Trestman, but I don't think they're going to fall apart like Detroit. I think Detroit's a team that could be a part of falling apart.
I disagree.
They were talking about firing shorts. It was right after the season. Management was considering it.
There wasn't no talking about it in Chicago. They did get rid of Levy. You don't have to worry about that.
Detroit is young and they have talent. It's not so with the Bears.
Yeah, I think Detroit's going to bounce back next year.
Here's the thing with Detroit. Detroit don't have discipline, and that's what's keeping them from being the 10-6 and 11-5 team that they should be.
Maybe once they draft D. Milner, everything will be okay.
Well, you got to worry about D. Milner. That's what they're probably going to do.
Come on, man.
I'll just say this. If they have a record to start bad like they start, then – I might be a coach who might get fired midseason. They have a start like they did the past year because I think they're gonna give him another year.
Clausel's talking about D. Milner. Vandenbosch was released and Cliff Apple's not getting a long term deal. All of a sudden, Detroit needs a pass rusher bad.
Well, yeah, and they need a compliment to Calvin Johnson too because they released Titus Young too, and they need a running back. They need a running back.
Murphy got hurt
because Javis Best is retiring pretty much. So
retiring? Who'd you hear this?
What I've heard, Javis Best. Yeah, he's done. That's been in this for a while, but from what I've heard, they're dedicated to. I think Tex, you were telling me that they're dedicated to LeSueur. So
yeah,
I don't think they're gonna be getting a running back.
That's who they want as their starting running back, but they want a guy like Javis Best. They want to pair somebody like that with LeSueur. But, yeah, LeSueur is their guy.
Reggie Bush?
I mean, maybe he costs too much.
Maybe, yeah.
But Bush is a guy probably.
So, with that being, Kyle Vandenbosch not being there, so you know, that might most likely could increase the chance of Cliff Averill getting his long-term deal, possibly, could it?
No, it's not worth the money.
Well,
I think, trust me, I mean, folks out here are kind of excited about the hire. We need an offensive mind guy, so I'm optimistic. But like I said, it's still early. We still got, you know, things to go before talking about Super Bowl and all that type of stuff, you know, all the teams. Everybody's, you know, season starts pretty much again back tomorrow for everybody, you know, getting back, you know, on track. Because that's what Baltimore, they got their interviews tomorrow, so. Everything's back, you know, we're evaluating everything. But on the AFC side, of the ball, I mean, Pittsburgh Steelers, I think they might be a team, again, I'm, of course, a fan of Mike Tomlin, but they're a team that's getting older. They got to get younger, and I think they're going through some transition. They got the quarterback, of course, but they got to get younger on the defense side, because, you know, some of their key guys are getting up there in age, including Troy Polamalu. And also, what I was about to say, again, too, Mike Wallace, will he be back? You know, if they lose him, that's going to be a big blow. But then Steelers always find, you know, they always draft well and find replacements. But we should see on that. So I think they're going to take a slide.
But
I think New England, go ahead.
Mike, you just said it, that they was going to go draft and they was going to go do the right thing.
But we'll see that, but we'll see, Gig. I mean, Mike Wallace, though, I mean, he's a big piece of their offense, though. Well, other receivers, I mean, I think he's their best receiver.
But
and he's still young, too.
He's actually not. He's a one-track wide receiver. But
who you think is better than Wallace? You think what's that do? Emmanuel? You think Emmanuel's a better all-around receiver than Wallace?
Wow, Mike Wallace is a one-dimensional wide receiver. Look, you don't have to worry about Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is going to go and they're going to draft. They're going to do things, make the right moves. They're going to coach, and they're going to be all right. That's just Pittsburgh, New England, Green Bay, San Francisco, Baltimore, Atlanta, franchises you don't have to worry about.
I still have that question mark on Pittsburgh, but if they somehow do what they do, I wouldn't be surprised. New England, I think, interesting with them, somebody said they think that New England dynasty could be over and Tom Brady is getting up there, this and that. I would kind of have to disagree. I think it might need to probably add, you know, a bit more on the defense side. It might could, you know, Tex made a good point, I think, last week or 2 weeks ago. I think it was last week about Greg Jennings. Let's say New England makes a run at him. I'd be a huge upgrade over Wes Welker. Because now you got Greg Jennings. You got definitely a guy who's more reliable and making big catches compared to Wes Welker. And I think finally he has that one receiver to pair up with the tight ends of Blanco and Aaron Hernandez. And, of course, Brandon Lloyd, I think he had a solid year. So I think New England's still on track. And I think Denver Broncos, I mean, I wouldn't write them off yet, but for them it's a year-to-year thing, of course, with Peyton Manning. They still got a young defense. And then they fired their secondary coach, which he should have been fired after that, because, remember, this team was on their way of going to the AFC Championship within 30-some seconds. Just the team who are the Super Bowl champions. So, I mean, I wouldn't count them boys out, you know. And they do what they do. You know, let's say they have a good offseason and they draft well and, you know, they keep their core intact. They might be, I mean, I didn't think they was going to make it that far. You know, I had New England and Houston in the AFC Championship, but maybe it'll be them next year in the Super Bowl or being my pick out of the AFC, being the Denver Broncos. And I think the Baltimore, and who knows, Ed Reed might be in New England. They've been talking about that, too. It's a possibility. Because I think they're not going to
retire.
Nah, he's not retiring. He's going to play. He still wants to play. And they were just saying also, about Talib Kweli that New England doesn't feel comfortable giving him a big-time deal. So I think he might be out there available. And I think the Baltimore Ravens, you know, the Super Bowl champs, I think they're gonna kind of fall off some. Losing Ray Lewis is gonna be big, you know, the leadership. But then they got guys that's older, so they kind of got to get younger. Come on, Clausell. not even because of that incident, but still, man, that's some big shoes to say. What do you got, Matt? I tell you, replacing a legend. Been with that franchise that long?
I mean, why not?
You also got to look at
Terrell Suggs.
He ain't that young either, so.
Yeah, Terrell Suggs. Also, too, Suggs coming back from that, you know, the injury, you know, his Achilles, you know, he came
Upshaw,
back.
Upshaw's supposed to replace him.
Oh, man. We'll see about that. That's some big shoes again. So it's going to be interesting
know,
to see, too.
Upshaw's pretty good, actually. He's shown. I've seen signs out of Upshaw. I don't think he's going to be as good as Terrell Suggs, but I've seen signs out of Upshaw that shows me that he'll be a productive NFL player.
I haven't seen anything from Upshaw this year.
So I have. Well, you're not watching the same games I'm watching. It's no big deal, but I'm just saying that. I think he'll be a productive NFL player.
Alabama games from 2 years ago.
No, son. Professional football games.
I didn't know they were really talking about that, so I saw it on the ticker, too. Holy Nata's getting, you know, MRI on his knee, so guys interested to see how that's going to respond back, you know, when training camp starts and all that, because, you know, at least they still got a holy Nasa, you know, but that's, you know, that's the only thing on that.
But, you know, right. But again, what I'm going to say again, and I'm going to keep on saying it, Baltimore some of these teams we naming, we just don't have to worry about it because we know the organization is going to do what they do. Baltimore still has some very good young players. Look at the offense besides Anquan Boldin. You understand what I'm saying? Osemele is a rookie. McKinney and Anquan Boldin. You understand what I'm saying? You still have Michael Orr. You have Osemele. On the defensive side of the ball, at middle linebacker, they're fine. Suggs is getting up there. The issue that Baltimore would have to watch out for is Kruger because he made money this postseason. So, you know,
he's a free agent. Yeah. And Ellsbury, too. The other linebacker, you know, he probably going to get his pay, too.
Back again, then Ladarius Webb, who many thought was their best defensive player anyway, going into the season, if he comes back and he's okay. But the thing is, the Baltimores, the Pittsburghs, the New Englands, I mean, there's no – we'll just have to see because we know what these guys are going to do. You understand what I'm saying? We know the organization. We know how they work. We know they're always going to pretty much compete unless the cupboard is just absolutely dry. But the people in place, Colbert, Ozzie Newsome, these guys, it's not happening. You know?
Would you put Cincinnati in that list too?
Huh?
Would you put Cincinnati in there too? Because they've been in the playoffs the past 2 years.
No.
Okay. Not necessarily an elite team, but a team that's going to make the playoffs. They're going to always compete.
They made it the past 2 years. I mean, at 9-7, I mean, you know, they're not doing anything.
Yeah, they got a 10. Tennessee's a young team, but, you know, like I said, they're a young, talented team, but I wouldn't put them in the league with those teams.
And
they're definitely a team on the come up. You know, they're a team that can make a run possibly, but, you know, New England or Pittsburgh type of team now.
Yeah, they're not even worthy of comparison. Look at them. Look at how many times that, you know, Pittsburgh didn't make the playoffs this year, but look over the years how many times they've been in the playoffs and been competitive compared to, you know, with Cincinnati. So, yeah, really, you know, they really weren't too much competitive that much until Marvin Lewis got there.
All right. We got about 12 more minutes left. And I want to know, hold on, Mike wanted to talk about this issue with on Twitter with A.J. McCarron and Darnell Dockett saying they're trying to fight. He's trying to fight A.J. McCarron and Chad Johnson. What's the situation behind that, Callie, Mike?
I guess Darnell Dockett had said something about, what's the girl's name?
Kamado?
Yeah, who Miss Alabama, who McCarron goes out with. He tried to get at her, I guess, on Twitter. And, you know, and she was like, you know, I got him with A.J. McCarron or whatever. Of course, McCarron found out. So he said something about Dockett. Then Dockett said something back out. I mean, you know, they kind of went back at each other about, you know, A.J. McCarron, you know, national championships and this and that. Then Dockett said, let's box or something like that. And then also he was into it with Chad Johnson, I guess, because Chad Johnson had said something to him about fighting them, Darnell Dockett and Ian Evelyn, so, you know, we got that, you know, but, I mean, like I say, basically, Darnell Dockett is maybe only because they're not getting no, trying to throw up his own, you know, I don't know, I mean, to me, that's kind of, you know, that's a low-down move to try to get out of dude's drum, you know, behind his back, just because you're on TV, you know. I mean, that's it, you know, and then have the nerve to get mad when the dude get back at you, you know.
You talking about you got mad at Chad Johnson, or you talking about A.J. McCarron?
A.J. McCarron.
You talking about I mean, dude, you're a professional football player, dude. I mean, why you got to be on that, man?
I mean,
you're
a professional football player. That's dirty. That's dirty knocking. You trying to get at a dude's girlfriend on Twitter, who you really don't even know.
Dirty
knocking. You know, you're on TV.
Is that Tariq Nasheed, man? Dirty Mackin?
Huh?
Did you get that from Tariq Nasheed? The term Dirty Mackin. Tariq Nasheed.
We've been using that out here in the Bay Area for a while now.
Okay, yeah, all right. Maybe he got that from out there because he lives in California. Okay, all right.
Yeah, the Dirty Mackin. I mean, that is Dirty Mackin, man. He's talking to dude's girl, you know, like that, man.
All right, well.
Knowing that she's not available.
It kind of blew up, and, you know, I've been seeing all different media outlets. You know, like I said, it's kind of sad, too. I mean, you know, Darnell Dockett, you're a millionaire football player. You can do better than that. You know,
I mean, you'd be surprised, man. You'd be surprised at some of these athletes, man. And look at Manti Te'o. So that should let you. If that doesn't tell you anything.
I have to keep reminding myself that even though they are football players, you know, they're still just regular men. So you're going to get a buster, you know, in every group, you know.
No, but you know, no. You will be surprised how many of these dudes fall for this stuff, you know. I mean, look at Chad Johnson marrying Evelyn, what's her name? I mean, he could have got somebody just as fine without the drama.
But he had his show, too, before that, though. I mean, but she just, like you said, she just wanted to be in the limelight, you know.
Yeah.
Like, and he met on Twitter, but she knew who he was. I mean, remember he had that Chad, that reality show of women to find on VH1 even before he met Evelyn, so.
No. And I didn't even know that. Not to get off a football tip. I didn't know. You know Ruben Studdard, the American Idol?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know he married a woman off the Nelly Tip Drill video. I didn't know that. He married a woman off that video.
Wow, I didn't know that either. I know he got married, but I didn't know he married one off that Tip Drill video. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, the line, you know, not really football. It is football related because a lot of these guys do it. The line has been blurred between Dixon, you know, porn star, regular women, you know, it's all blurred now. You know, these guys, I mean, they don't really even care no more. I mean, they mess around with the same girls, you know, all the girls in the videos, you see them with a football player. I mean, you know, they don't really care, man. I mean, it's just, you know, I don't know. It's kind of getting out of control. I mean, look, you know, I read some of the details. I had never read them before about the sex party that they had on the boat up there in Minnesota with the Vikings players. And that stuff was pretty lewd, man. And these are dudes just meeting strippers for the first time. And, I mean, they were getting, you know, down and dirty. I mean, it was a shame, you know. Your first time meeting somebody and you commit a sex act with them, you know, unprotected. And, it's, you know, like I said, these guys, I think they're to the point where they don't even care no more, you know.
It was testosterone. They were there to have a party, and that was that.
Look at LeSean McCoy, you know, you guys see what he just went through with his baby's mom over Twitter, you know, and apparently this is a girl who he just met and, you know, and ended up getting pregnant because she lied to him about birth control, you know, and now he has a kid with her and got up, you know, and they, you know, they're going back and forth on Twitter, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, it's starting to become pandemic with these guys.
I know McCoy had that rookie symposium thing. I mean, I guess he didn't listen to all the way on that part, got caught in that trap.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's not a rookie symposium. It's common sense. You know, don't turn a hoe into a housewife. How many times you got to hear it?
Yeah, it's not that. You right on that.
Well, all right.
Unless he ain't trying to be one of the men that want to settle down, just be out there and do what he do. I mean, hey, some people out there don't want to have that settled life like that, though, too. So, but then that's not a woman you want to have, you know, be your baby mom and have all that, then try to protect yourself or
yeah,
shit. Make sure you've seen
it. You know, even AJ McCarron's girl, I mean, I don't know her personally, but, you know, she has a look in her eye of somebody who wants to be a star. So, I mean, let's see how long that relationship lasts. You know,
it ain't gonna last long. It ain't gonna last long. Trust me.
Yeah, you know, as soon as you know some movie star, you know George Clooney or somebody get out of it, let's see how long that lasts. You know, so unless AJ McCarron, you know, becomes a first round draft picker, you know, which he could, NFL star or something, I guess, you know.
No, he's not. He's not gonna be a first round draft pick.
Well, if he be a star or something like that,
he's not gonna be a star in the NFL.
Never know, man.
Yeah, I hope he is for his sake. But anyway.
Well, never know. He might break up with her. He might, you know, let's say, be a lot of football player, be on the road and stuff like that. Let's say he meets somebody. You know, you never know.
Yeah, I wouldn't go that way with him. Like, I
I mean, you never know. I'm just saying, you never know.
Yeah.
I was gonna say this too. I just thought about this. I don't know if you heard about it, but I didn't really say too much about it. But they were saying Dan Marino got a love child, you know, from an employee from I guess he had a fair wing and I'm having a baby and stuff,
yeah.
Like a 5-year old.
This TMZ or a football show, man.
I found that out on NFL.com. You know, NFL.com or ESPN, they had that said. I didn't even go to the TMZ site.
Sports is just a microcosm of society, man. You got to understand that, though. But anyway, I see where you're coming from, Tex. I see where you're coming from, Tex. We're going to get it back on the football here. Let's just talk about, like, what's the – as we wind down and we recap the past football season, what was the biggest surprise or what was the biggest story of this whole year, in your opinion? Let me start with you, Tex.
Yikes. To me, it had to be – I mean, it was – to me, it was probably – Peyton Manning and Adrian Peterson to come back from their injuries and do what they did. Adrian Peterson almost breaking the record, having his best season as a pro coming off knee injury. Peyton Manning coming back with the year off. And while they did not have the success they wanted to in the postseason, probably had the best season of his career. So you have guys that are veterans. You got a guy that could possibly be on the downside in Manning, and he comes out, and he has one of his best seasons ever. So I think those two guys are probably the biggest stories this year. And Roger Goodell screwed with the Saints. I mean, he really screwed with them.
Nice. He sure did.
Let me start with you, James. Where you at? What you think?
I'd have to go with the whole New Orleans Saints deal. I mean, that pretty much went through the whole season, and then they came off, you know, pretty much all messed up for both parties. I mean, the Saints were pretty much ended up getting screwed, and the NFL looked like the NCAA with their incompetence of the whole situation. So I'd say the whole Saints thing was the biggest story of the NFL this season.
All right. Shottown, what's your take?
I mean, even though we know the season started, we already knew the Saints thing because I was talking pretty much the whole summer and all that type of stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I hope something like that never happens again, you know, like you said, like Tex said, because they really messed their season up with all that. They see that pretty much was kind of ended before the season even started with all that mess. But I was going to say, you know, the rookie quarterbacks, man. I don't know if we're ever going to see nothing like that again. The impact this guy came in starting and playing, you know, Luck and RG3s and Russell Wilson's. And then Kaepernick, you know, he's not a rookie, second-year guy come in, you know, the young quarterbacks. Like, man, it was unbelievable what they done. And seeing, you know, some of the guys that are pocket quarterbacks as well, doing, you know, seeing more of the spread offense. And of course, they're going to keep talking about that, you know, for a minute, you know, going into the draft and, you know, who's going to be, you know, the next guy and all that, you know, with the quarterbacks. And when the season starts, of course, they're going to be mentioning about that. I definitely say those quarterbacks and then stories of guys in the NFL, of course, Peyton Manning, you know, he has, you know, statistically-wise had his best seasons probably ever this season. You know, and we all thought, you know, didn't think, you know, he was ever going to probably play again or play at that high level like that. So, I mean, definitely, you know, him, what he did. And he definitely deserved, you know, comeback player of the year.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't going to get the MVP award, so, I mean, they got that right because it could have gone either or. AP could have been, you know, comeback player of the year award and then Peyton Manning the MVP. But then, you know, Adrian Peterson, what he did, you know, coming back, you know, 8 months from the ACL and almost broke Eric Dickerson's record, you know, who was only a few yards short. And he was pretty much their whole offense. You know, Minnesota, you know, kind of had their struggles, you know, inconsistent at times at the quarterback position there for Pounder. And then, you know, Percy Harvin being out, he was their main threat. So, I mean, he pretty much did it all. Everybody's game on Adrian Peterson, and he still did what he did. And they offensive line, too, I mean, it's, you know, it's not the greatest offensive line, so that's something they definitely can have more, too.
The Vikings have a solid O-line, Mike. They have a solid O-line.
Think the Vikings got a solid line?
No, I don't think. I know, man. They got Matt Khalil, Phil Loadholt. It's not a bad – those are the tackles. It's not a bad O-line.
Maybe I'm thinking about the – oh, yeah, then, too, Khalil, you know, being young. I should say a line that's, you know, transitioning because it's kind of still a young line. But Lamo's a free agent, too, though, so it'll be interesting to see if they're going to resign him.
All right. Cali, Mike, what's your take?
I'd actually have to go with college football. I have to go bring back up Matthew Taylor, Saga. You know, the more we hear about this thing, the stranger it gets. I think that if you look at, you know, and I wasn't originally I was always one for all this year for saying, you know, we got to give Notre Dame the credit for winning the game. If you look at it, how much more support did they get because of that, you know, because of this scandal? I mean, you know, now, you know, like I say, now the homosexual angle is coming out. You know, it's, you know, these guys are on Dr. Phil and getting interviews with Katie Couric. And, you know, like I said, now that the draft's going to come up, it's only going to keep lasting. I mean, I think this is a really big story for this year. And like I tell you, it's something that's never really happened. You know, maybe it happened before, but never really happened in the public of, you know, for football like this. And I think it's just, you know, a really, you know, now they're saying that they got a team, you know, at Michigan that's going to work full time, making sure their players don't, you know, don't get anything involved in this. I think, you know, other schools are going to start doing the same. I mean, it's, you know, like I say, I don't think there's been a bigger story all this year for, you know, for football.
Mm.
Yeah, definitely.
Something tells me, I just have this gut feeling. I think Mansell Taylor is going to be a pretty good pro player. I just have this really, like, gut feeling that he's going to be a very good pro football player. I just want to predict that.
That's why I think the story is going to make me think about it. If he does become a good pro player, this is going to stick with him for the rest of his career, no matter what, you know.
Yeah.
And if he becomes,
I think this all this media attention is just setting the stage, you know. Like even with like Janoris Jenkins last year, I was like, I don't know if you people were remembering, like they were talking about the Rams were trying to negotiate his contract after he got drafted to account for his kids, and I'm like, why the heck they care about his kids or something like that?
Boy,
I'm like, you should take.
Yeah,
and it comes out he's a pretty good player. So I'm like, I think this guy's gonna be a pretty good player. Or something. I just had this gut feeling.
He was gonna be a first round talent had it not happened, possibly. So I mean, you never know.
Yeah, but I think to see Alabama win a national championship, lose all those players to the league, and then come back and bounce back like it nothing ever happened. Even though they had one little small blimp against Texas A&M, I think that was my story of the year. I think there was a point that the first 3-4 games of the year, they were looking better than what the 2001 Miami Hurricanes looked like. But then they fell off, and then they just looked like...
Did you ever notice you could be saying something normal and then you'll just say something completely crazy?
Whatever, man. Say, hey.
Wow.
Hey, whatever.
he was saying all that mess. Yeah, he was saying it.
But you know, I think that's the story of the year. Alabama bouncing back, winning back-to-back national championships. I think that was a very good story to see that happen. And hopefully they can go for 3 times in a row. But, anyway, it's been a great 2012 year. We were going to take a few months off for CMT Firestorm. We're going to be back here 2 weeks before the NFL draft. If you want to know more about opinions and whatnot, go to our CMT Firestorm Facebook page. We will post stuff regularly until the draft about college, professional football, or any type of football. So I'm Crossell Mathis on the rest of the panel. We all like to say goodbye. We will be back here in a few months to talk about the NFL draft. 2 weeks before the draft, we will have another show. I hope all is well. Peace. Good night.
Bye, y'all.
Leon Sandcastle, yeah. Number one pick.
All right, fellas.
Dee Milner, number one.
Yep.
You'll hear that metal talk for a while hearing it.
Peace out, everybody.
Okay.